We're ready for counsel, United States v. Rodriguez-Flores, 172039. Mr. Pincus.
May it please the Court. My name is Howard Pincus from the Federal Public Defender, and I represent Miguel Rodriguez-Flores. The evidence did not connect Mr. Rodriguez-Flores, a trainee and ride-along passenger, to drugs in the trailer of Mr. Guzman Dominguez's truck. By logical and probabilistic reasoning, the evidence is therefore legally insufficient to support his conviction. The prosecution stressed two pieces of evidence to connect Mr. Rodriguez-Flores to the drugs. One was that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores put a lock on the trailer. But the only evidence is that Mr. Guzman Dominguez, who was the owner of the truck and who was supervising Mr. Rodriguez-Flores, directed him to put on the lock. That he complied with that is no proof that he was securing what was in the trailer, much less that what was in the trailer were drugs. The second piece of evidence that the prosecution relied on was that in his statements to authorities the morning after they were apprehended at the port of entry station, that he did not mention a delay in Phoenix when the prosecution surmised that drugs were put in the trailer. But he was only asked all the places he had been, and that's at the supplemental record, volume 26A at 11. Even if this could be considered to be a false exculpatory story, that kind of evidence is of limited probative value, as this court has explained in Rasaparian. The reason is that the most logical and probable inference is that it's a response to being implicated in illegal activity. And Mr. Rodriguez-Flores had been told that they found 50 kilograms of cocaine in the trailer.
Well, that wouldn't necessarily mean that he knew that that window of time had probative value, that mattered. I mean, if the evidence suggests that the time they would have put the drugs in was the time in Phoenix, and he shrinks 3 hours to 1 hour, unless he had some reason to know that that window of time mattered, then why would it not be significant?
Well, it's not significant for a couple of reasons. First, as I mentioned, there's the notion that he actually shrank the time is questionable, because in the recorded statement, he was only asked, where have you been?
He said he was getting ready to go, wasn't he? I mean, he said we ate and we left.
Right.
And 3 hours is a long time. That's a long supper. I don't know about that.
It is.
Yeah.
But even if you take it as shrinking the time, the most logical thinking when he's told there were all these drugs in the trailer, and he knows that the trailer was empty when they went to Mirachem, is that at some point after that, unless it was an inside job, the drugs were put in. So caught in the moment and confronted, said, being told there's 50 kilograms of drugs in the trailer, that is the logical and probable response.
Boy, that's far afield from an exculpatory no. I mean, that involves mapping this thing out and thinking about what your alibi story is going to be. Well, that suggests, if you would concede that, except, well, you may not, but I mean, it would seem to me that there is a basis for consciousness of guilt associated with such an elaborate, even if an elaborate exculpatory response.
There's nothing elaborate about it. All he said was we ate and we left.
Logically, he had to be thinking, oh, well, you know, the drugs had to be planted at some point, and we were in Phoenix, and so I guess that what I need to do is shrink the time so that it doesn't look like the drugs could have been planted there. I mean, that requires doing a lot of thought.
Well, all this court said in Rasaparian is that if there's an actual false statement, a false story, that the most logical and probable reason is that you were confronted with the crime. That's why it has limited probative value. This court has said it's not direct evidence of guilt. And that's one of the two main things that they're stressing. And even if...
We don't need direct evidence of guilt, do we? Circumstantial evidence is fine, right?
circumstantial evidence can support guilt. Sure.
Yes, it can. Right. And if you pile up enough circumstantial evidence, it'll do that.
But they don't have anything really here. They have the lock. They have nothing
about,
that shows he knew
the drug. What was it, a Facebook post? How about the Facebook post, which indicated that your client knew that he was going to the north, going to the northeast even before they had a load?
Well,
how about that?
There's no evidence that he wasn't just repeating what Mr. Guzman Dominguez told him. Mr. Guzman Dominguez was the one who arranged the load. He had looked the night before, and there was a trip to the northeast, to Indianapolis. He may have told him, we're going to these places.
What we're talking about is whether a rational jury piecing together all these pieces of circumstantial evidence could find enough for guilt. So, I mean, they don't have to know what Dominguez Flores told him. They don't have to know anything.
Well, the government, in its sentencing statement, agreeing that Mr. Rodriguez Flores was entitled to a minimal role, that's at volume 1, page 231, said, Mr. Guzman Dominguez was the one who got the load. He was the one who was supervising Mr. Rodriguez Flores. And in any event, none of that suggests that he knew it was drugs. They have to prove that he knew what was in there was drugs.
I want to make sure I understand your argument. I understand you'd be saying that if someone's accused of a crime and lies about what had happened, that's not probative of consciousness of guilt?
No, it is probative. That's what this court has said. It's limited probative value. It's not direct evidence. It's circumstantial proof of consciousness of guilt.
I mean, when you say limited, that makes all... When the only issue here is knowledge, mm-hmm. really. If he knew the drugs were there, if the jury believed that, they could easily find guilt. So the issue is whether they can find that he knew the drugs were there. And lying supports a finding by the jury of consciousness of guilt. Why? What am I missing there? You're saying it's not really very good evidence of consciousness?
That's what this court has said in Rossiparian. It's of limited probative value because...
I mean, there are millions of cases saying lying when you're accused is evidence of consciousness of guilt.
Again, there's no lie. There's no evidence of lying here. He was only asked...
Well, yeah. Oh, he said they just... What do you mean there's no evidence of lying? We know from the evidence at trial that they were there for 3 hours in Phoenix, right?
Correct.
Yes. But he didn't describe it that way.
He didn't describe it that way.
Yeah.
But again, they have to show he knows that there's drugs in the trailer. As this court said in Rossiparian, putting him in a climate that reeks of illegal activity doesn't support that.
They're together for 3 hours in Phoenix. The jury can easily infer that they must have gone somewhere, put the drugs in. Somebody did that. And for his co-defendant to have done that without his not knowing is not very likely.
Or that they were put in at... by other people that Mr. Guzman Dominguez was in cahoots with there. There's nothing that shows he knew drugs, even if you infer that he suspected something. And that's a stretch.
Could we go to your other issue?
Sure. The prosecution used their expert witness, Agent Montoya, to boost the credibility, to say that Mr. Rodriguez Flores' denials of knowledge were not to be believed. Mr. Agent Montoya said that he had debriefed hundreds of people, that he interviewed hundreds of people in drug trafficking organizations, and the prosecution specifically asked him, in your experience, are these people who deny knowledge of drugs that are found in a vehicle in which they're riding, are they to be believed? And he said no. And Mr. Rodriguez Flores' denial of knowledge was the key disputed issue at trial. This court has said...
How do you think the jury interpreted what the expert said? He wasn't really purporting to know anything specific about the defendant. Is that correct?
That's correct.
He's essentially saying everybody else who said this has been lying.
Right. He says that he's basically saying when people deny knowledge of drugs in a car based on the hundreds of interviews that I've done with people involved in these kinds of operations, they're not telling the truth. And whether Mr. Rodriguez-Flores was telling the truth in his pretrial statements denying knowledge that the jury heard and saw through the videotape was essential to the defense. This was certainly not a strong case, even if this court concludes it's legally sufficient. And
I want to make sure what you were challenging. Maybe I misread your brief. I didn't understand you to be challenging the testimony that, when he said, I've obviously had people who have claimed to have been unwitting, but through the investigation, they're found not to be. Were you challenging that also?
No. The main thing that we're challenging is the statement that...
The main thing, or are you challenging that statement?
I think that's probably part of it, but the...
No, I didn't see... I thought you were focusing on his statement that I don't believe these people, not the foundation for that statement.
It's certainly not the foundation for it.
Yeah. And so... Because my problem is, what does that particular statement that you're challenging add to what he had already said? I'm going to, as a former colleague would say, I'll spot you.
Okay.
That the specific statement you're challenging is inadmissible. We're looking at plain error. You have to establish that that was prejudicial.
Correct.
And if the substance of that was already offered, I mean, you had one agent, Agent Schaefer, that mm-hmm. said earlier in the trial, at that time we did not believe the credibility of either of the stories. You didn't challenge that?
Right.
And you didn't
did not challenge that.
And you didn't challenge the testimony that he's never, that everyone else who's claimed not to know has been lying. So what more?
By Agent Montoya?
Yes, by Montoya.
Okay.
I didn't see you challenging that. So what I'm asking is, given that other testimony that you're not challenging, how was the testimony that you are challenging, how was that really that prejudicial, additionally prejudicial to your client?
Well, maybe I'm misremembering that piece of what we challenged, but the what we're complaining about is this comment about him not to be believed. It's all of a piece.
About everybody lying.
That these people typically lie when they are confronted,
yes.
when they deny, when they say they're an unwitting courier. That was the main issue at trial.
There's the one statement. Do you generally believe these people were telling the truth when they told you they didn't know about the drugs they were transporting? Answer, no.
Right.
That you challenged.
That we're challenging, absolutely.
Okay. And I'm saying I'll...
Okay, you're spotting me that.
That's, yes.
Okay.
That's in this. I didn't see where you challenged, and maybe I missed it. Maybe you can tell me you are challenging, where you challenged. I've had obviously people who have claimed to have been unwitting, but through the investigation, they're found not to be. Was that also being challenged? Because that wasn't clear to me. In fact, I thought you weren't challenging.
Well, I don't know that we made a specific challenge to that, and I think that's very different. If he says, sometimes we've investigated and they found to be lying, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But he says, generally, these people are not telling the truth.
The last thing I quoted was saying, sometimes people say they were unwitting, but they're found not to be.
Okay.
And that was the basis of his conclusion that the defendants here were lying.
I think the statement he gave about credibility was much broader and more inclusive, and it said these people, when people deny knowledge, they're not telling the truth. The main response from the government has been that he didn't close the circle on this, but this court in Benally said that if the import of the credibility testimony is that the person is not to be believed, that it falls under this court's prohibition against expert testimony and credibility. And as in, it clearly had an effect in this trial where it was a weak case at the most. And under Hill, this is the type of error for which this court will give plain error relief. So we ask that you vacate the convictions and remand with instructions to dismiss, or at the minimum, vacate and remand for a new trial.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Richard Williams. Excuse me. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. This court should affirm the sentence of the district court below. The evidence was sufficient for a reasonable jury to find Mr. Rodriguez-Flores guilty based on the direct and circumstantial evidence and all the...
How is this evidence admissible? The challenged evidence admissible about these people aren't to be believed?
Your Honor, I would submit that that was offered to provide the agent's background and experience for the unwitting courier testimony that immediately followed.
I couldn't see how that was relevant to anything that was being challenged. The only reason the defendant put on that evidence was to show that his clients were willing to help out, which would indicate reportedly, their innocence. I didn't see anything in the trial where the defendants were challenging the failure of the officers to allow them to make a controlled delivery. They were never saying, you should have allowed them to make a controlled delivery, and then the agents have to defend their actions by saying, well, the reason we didn't have them conduct a controlled delivery is because we didn't believe them. That's not what happened in the trial. So I couldn't understand what it was relevant to. In fact, in an opening statement, the defense attorney said that the reason there was no controlled delivery was by the time they could get it organized, it was too late. The people at the other end would know there was something up because it was taking too long. So what was it relevant for?
Well, and regarding the controlled delivery, as you pointed out, there was evidence from the HSI agent who conducted the interview that he did not find either defendant credible.
Yeah, and that's, I don't understand why that was admissible either. I'm surprised it wasn't challenged. Why? He volunteered that, but it wasn't in response to anything brought up by the defendant. Why could the agent testify, I didn't believe these guys, when they said they didn't know?
The defendants put forward that they were unwitting couriers, right, and that their offer to do a controlled delivery corroborated that. So I would submit that that put into issue how the agents responded to the situation when it was presented to them. And as to Agent Montoya's testimony...
Do you have any case support for that? That doesn't sound right to me. When there's no check, the only relevance I can see to the agents not believing them is if there was a challenge to why the agents didn't allow a controlled delivery. But defense counsel never attacked the officers for not allowing a controlled delivery. They posited that the reason there wasn't a controlled delivery was because it took too long before the people who could arrange for the controlled delivery showed up on the scene, and then it would be too suspicious to those getting the delivery because of the delay. So you weren't responding to anything from defendant that I can see.
I would suggest it was also relevant to the proposition of drug trafficking organizations using unwitting couriers in certain circumstances. And both parties noticed beforehand that they were going to offer expert testimony on the use by organizations of unwitting couriers. And immediately following this exchange with Special Agent Montoya, he described those circumstances in which he was familiar with organizations using unwitting couriers, and he said those were limited to marijuana cases of smaller quantities at the border.
Yeah, expert testimony regarding why you wouldn't use an unwitting courier when you've got large quantities, that makes sense. But the testimony that these people are always lying, it's like having testimony that that FBI agents almost never lie on the stand. You wouldn't allow that in. I don't.
In light of Benally, why isn't this problematic? I mean, as a bottom line, it seems to me that you look at Benally, that Benally did not draw a straight line between the testimony of the expert and its prejudicial effect, the target, and we found that to be error. Why isn't that error here?
Well, in Benally, the court found that it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to exclude it. And here and what they said in the court said in Benally was that the obvious import of the testimony there was that the jury should disregard the defendant's testimony and accept the prior confession. And here I would submit that the import of this very limited question was to provide Special Agent Montoya's background, because he then was going to describe those circumstances in which he was aware of drug trafficking organizations using unwitting couriers and those in which they were not.
Well, why is that relevant to his background? I mean, it would seem that the import of it is that guy's lying. That defendant is lying to you. If the defendant says, I didn't know, and he says, in my experience, every time I encounter somebody who says they don't know, they're lying, well, in light of Benally, where do you go with that? Import of that is what? He's lying, right?
In this case, however,
have a master's in logic to draw that line, do you?
There was the single question that was identified regarding the agent believing those people not to be telling the truth, and then the testimony immediately went into unwitting couriers, and the testimony regarding Special Agent Montoya's belief of whether or not couriers or people apprehended with drugs were telling the truth was only returned to on cross-examination when counsel for Guzman Dominguez asked him the same question. And it was not argued in closing by the government. And so I would submit that even if it was error, that it wasn't plain or clear based on the lack of authority, that it's impermissible in this particular context in which unwitting courier testimony is being offered by both sides. But moreover, that it doesn't satisfy the third prong of the plain error review, and specifically that Rodriguez-Flores cannot show that but for the admission of that single answer, the result of the proceeding would have been different. And that's for a number of reasons. First, that, as we noted, the agent who had conducted the interview explained why they didn't do a controlled delivery. It was because they hadn't believed them. Second, that the jury had...
Well, I have a problem with that. That's what I was pursuing with Mr. Pincus, is there were objections to other evidence that seemed to duplicate the inadmissible evidence, but should we really say it wasn't prejudicial because there was additional unchallenged inadmissible testimony that came in? I don't see how the officer, what was the name again?
Schaefer.
I don't see how it was appropriate for him to say, we did not believe the credibility of either of the stories. That seemed to be inadmissible. It wasn't challenged, but I'd hate to say that the challenged testimony wasn't prejudicial because there was other inadmissible evidence that isn't being challenged on appeal.
And I would, on that point, only reiterate that there was repeated questioning about the opportunity to do a controlled delivery, and he was responding to why that wasn't done.
But there were? You say there were repeated? I didn't see that, so maybe that would make a difference. Where did the defendant complain that the officers could have but didn't conduct a controlled delivery?
Well, I'm referring to the references of the defendants being willing to do a controlled delivery or try to catch the big fish.
They said that, but in the context of saying that, in opening statement, defense counsel specifically said, but it wasn't done because they couldn't get it organized. They didn't have the right people there in time to do it.
Is that part of the truth, though? I mean, do the agents dispute that that is part of the reason they did not do a controlled delivery?
Which part?
The part that says that we didn't do it because it took too long, therefore it might have tipped off the people they were delivering it to. Was that contested at all, or did the agents agree that was at least part of the reason they didn't do it?
I think the testimony from the agents in the record was that they didn't go forward on the controlled delivery because they didn't have confidence in the information they were receiving from Mr. Rodriguez-Flores and Mr. Guzman-Dominguez.
Okay, so that testimony could have been in response to, or at least it was, the effect of it was to rebut the opening statement comment of the defense lawyer as to his narrative for why they didn't go forward with the controlled buy.
Yes, sir.
Well, I thought the DEA agents, there were three stages here. There were the transportation agents, and then some state police agents, and then DEA agents. Is that right?
Correct. The, okay. The narcotics were apprehended at the POE, and then state police responded, and then Homeland Security responded.
Okay. And the state police agents, I thought, said they couldn't arrange a controlled buy. They didn't have the resources to do that. And that the DEA or the DHS agents said, by the time we got there, it was too late to do a controlled buy. Am I wrong about that?
You may be correct. I don't remember specifically what the state police agents said. I was referring to when the case got referred to Homeland Security and they responded and took over.
I think the only person who said we didn't believe them and that's why we didn't do it was Officer Schaefer.
And I think that's correct. I don't know anywhere else.
At that point, there hadn't been a challenge to why they didn't do it.
Other than the reference in an opening statement and elsewhere that they were willing to. But I would also focus on the evidence that rebuts the third prong or establishes that the defendant cannot show that. And that would be that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores said that they were in Phoenix for approximately an hour after eating when the location data established that they were there for much longer than that, and that that evidence is not just to his consciousness of guilt, but to the window in which the drugs were loaded. If the jury accepted the testimony from the Merichem employees that the drugs were not loaded at Merichem, then that is the window in which it could have occurred. And Mr. Guzman-Dominguez testified that he and Mr. Rodriguez-Flores worked together during that time period, and so the jury could reasonably infer that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores would have been present also. And regarding the lock,
why wouldn't that evidence standing alone have been enough? And why do we have to get into this other aspect of the case that is bothering Judge Hart so much? That is the Hill-type testimony where you aren't claiming your expert is an expert on credibility and has some psychological training in the field, but instead resort to even more generalized expertise, as it were, about credibility.
And, Your Honor, I would submit that is enough. The evidence regarding...
Why didn't you stop there at trial? Why do you go into this other stuff? Pardon the use of the word stuff.
the parties had noticed beforehand that they were going to elicit expert testimony regarding unwitting couriers, and this court has approved of such expert testimony. Granted, the question about
we disapprove of such testimony.
Pardon?
What did you say? What was your last sentence?
Had approved of such testimony regarding unwitting couriers.
Oh,
this court has.
Couriers. All right. Excuse me.
The testimony that
the mules,
that when you're having large quantities of drugs transported, you don't want to use an unwitting courier because of the risk.
No. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So the additional evidence I'll point this court to is that the seal was located at Mr. Rodriguez's feet on the passenger floorboard, that he had not put it on, that he did state, and Mr. Guzman-Dominguez stated that he put on the lock that Mr. Guzman-Dominguez stated that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores had control of the key, that after Rodriguez-Flores put the key on the keychain, that he maintained control. That's why I would submit this is not like a typical passenger case in which control is the question there. Here we had direct evidence before the jury that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores actually had control over the trailer where the drugs were located.
Guzman-Dominguez, in his testimony, did he dispute the fact that he told Rodriguez-Flores to put the lock on?
No, sir. No, sir. But I would submit that the jury could draw the inference that Mr. Rodriguez-Flores put on the lock in order to secure the load.
What was that evidence about the seal? Well, did they offer an explanation under oath as to why they didn't put the seal on?
I've gone over. May I respond?
Sure.
I believe the testimony was something to the effect of sometimes they put it on, sometimes they don't, but Mr. Guzman-Dominguez said that's not my responsibility.
Thank you. Well, I have a question on the seal, I guess. Who is responsible for the seal and who, in fact, puts it on?
The employee from Mirachem explained that their procedure at the time was to provide the seal to the driver.
Well, that seems silly to me, because if you're trying to assure the sanctity of the contents, it would seem to me that the person who loads the truck would then seal it so that at the time of delivery and in reopening, the seal is unbroken and therefore QED, there has been no tampering with any of the contents in the interim. And if you give it the seal to the driver, I mean, it follows that the driver is the one in control, not the person who's shipping.
And the Mirachem employee testified that they had changed their policy since this case.
Thank you.
Regarding the controlled deliveries, the agent said that they wouldn't do a controlled delivery when people denied knowledge of the drugs. So that was the short and easy answer to that reference in opening statements. Secondly, as there's no...
Who said that in opening statements?
Well, the notion that the theory that we offered to do, we wanted to do controlled delivery and they wouldn't accommodate that. That was the prosecution's claim that this was a response to that, but the complete response to it was we don't do it when they deny knowledge. Again, no evidence that it's drugs versus something else. And as to the entrustment theory, we know from Ramirez that it doesn't operate against the passenger. And if you look at Jones, which cited pages 25 to 27 from our brief, you did not apply it against a passenger where there were 200 kilograms of cocaine in the car.
How do you get past the fourth prong of Olano on plain error?
Well, this court in Hill said that this is the type of error for which we give relief, that
right, but
credibility.
But Hill and Alani don't go so far as to suggest that it would shock the public conscience if they learned that trials were utilizing this type of evidence.
Well, shock to public conscience isn't a test. That's actually the Fifth Circuit case up in the Supreme Court on that. It's only whether it seriously affects the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of judicial proceedings.
Well, I'm talking about public reputation.
Right. This court in Hill said credibility is the exclusive function of the jury. It's a cornerstone of our judicial system, and this kind of testimony warrants relief for plain error.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Counsel.